we are visiting today, and your name is?
Ron Kicker.
Ron Kicker.
Right.
And you are from Webster, South Dakota, right?
Webster, South Dakota, okay. Correct.
The afternoon of the flood, where were you that day?
Well, I was out in the Badlands of South Dakota with the 142nd Field Artillery Headquarters Battery out of Webster, South Dakota, and all the other units out there, and for a two-week summer camp. And then Friday afternoon, well, we got a weekend pass, so then I came to Rapid City with three of my guard buddy friends.
And were the three friends were all from the same unit out of Webster?
Right, all from Headquarters Battery out of Webster, that's correct.
Okay.
My girlfriend at the time, I eventually married her, most beautiful gal in the whole world, and she brought my 69 Camaro out here from Webster with another one of her girlfriends who was dating one of the other guard guys. So that was so we met them in Rapid City. Well, I'll tell you what happened is we did not have any motel or hotel reservations, so we drove around town kind of searching for a place to stay for the night and stopped at one place and got a price, and I thought, well, we'll just keep looking around, and we ended up down at the Pyramid Motel on Omaha and East Boulevard, just basically 40, 50 feet from Rapid Creek. And they were a dollar cheaper, so we thought, well, my gosh, you know, a dollar was a lot of money back then, you know. So we elected to stay at the Pyramid Motel there and made reservations. And then after that, well, we decided to go downtown and celebrate and have a beer. So we went down to the Brass Rail in downtown Rapid City.
Still there.
It's still there. I understand that. I know. I heard that.
All right, cool.
We were at the Brass Rail. There was a number of guard personnel because, you know, there were several thousand guard people in the Badlands, of course, which was a blessing, of course, for Rapid City in that time frame. But, my three guard buddy friends and the two gals were in there, and some of the other, our sergeant, first sergeant was in there, and he actually was killed that night in the flood. But he was in there with us. Had a drink with him, and anyway, the water started coming in. We knew it was raining hard. You know, the waitress told us that, and the water started coming in the front door. It was up over the curb, and up over the sidewalk, and coming in the front door. And we thought, well, that's a heck of a rain, you know. And so we just thought, well, maybe we're just going to get out of here and head back to the Pyramid Motel. So that's what we did. And we went in and we had a little booze with us, right? So we were, you know, still enjoying some fellowship there and playing some cards. And there were bunk beds in there. This was kind of a sorority house for the Rapid City School of Mines, actually, that they were...
Oh.
They were generating some money to, by running this Pyramid Motel. And so anyway, there were bunk beds in there, and all these vacationers, older people, we thought they were old people at the time, but anyway, I don't do that anymore. But anyway, so we were sitting on the bottom bunk playing cards, and the water started coming in through the doors and all that. And... came up 6 inches, 8 inches, 10 inches, what the heck, you know. So we thought, well, we'll move up to the top bunk, you know. And, we were sure that the water was going to recede, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just a heck of a rain, you know. It'll go down and all will be well, you know. Well, anyway, when the water got up like about 18 or 20 inches or something like that, maybe 24, I'm not sure. But it was deep, and I remember waiting down the hallway, and I tried to open the door, and of course, they're fire doors. They open to the outside, you know, and I tried to open the door, and I could not open the door. So at that point, I knew that we were in trouble. This was bad. I looked out the window, and not good. So and we started getting pretty alarmed at that point in time, and so we kicked out a couple windows, double windows on the south side of the building, and we thought, well, we're going to have to get on top of this roof because we can't get out of here. So anyway, Terry Gajkowski, we call him the Polak, big boy, he got out on the windowsill, and there was a car leaning up against the south side of the hotel that had washed away there. And I got out, and I got myself up on top of the hotel, the motel, their pyramid motel, and Terry, the Polak, he started handing these people up, pushing them up there, and then I would pull them up. I had a pretty good right arm, and I'd pull them up on top, and there was a total of 66 of us on top of that hotel.
66 yep, yep, people.
Yep. And so, I've oftentimes said there's no question in my mind there should have been 66 more deaths added to that 234, I believe, or 232 that night. But anyway, and then Roger Aker was another one of the guard guys, and Randy Horder, they were helping people get over there and trying to calm them and helping them get up in the window so the Polak could get them fed up to me. And up on top of the hotel, we eventually got all of us up there, and Lona Coyne at the time and Marilyn Millam, they tried to help calm people, and we just watched the water keep coming up, and it was such a terrible storm. I mean, it was the lightning and the thunder, you know, and the noise, you know, it was just phenomenal, you know, and watched my car float away, and then here comes trees and debris and coming down the creek, you know, and all of a sudden, I mean, now the water's up 4 or 5 feet, you know, and it was a horrible night. And then eventually the water just kept coming up at 6 feet on top of an 8 foot high building built out of cinder block, you know. And I was in the concrete business for 47 years, so, and I did basements, and so I know how structurally sound a concrete basement can be. I also know a cinder block wall, I could actually go through that with a sledgehammer in 10 minutes, no question about it. There's no structural strength, you know, pushing from the side. Mm-hmm. And if anything would have hit the side of that building, I know that it would have collapsed. And that's why I totally believe in angels. I believe there was angels with us that night. And we did a lot of praying and tried to calm the people and all that. We also sang some songs to try to keep, you know, we didn't know what to do. We hadn't been trained for this, but mm-hmm. we were just four guard guys, and we knew that we had to step up, and we just had to step up to the plate. Anyway, the water, like I said, it eventually came up 7.5 feet on that 8-foot-high building, and why it didn't completely, I don't know. But we watched houses go by with kids in the second story window, you know, calling for help, and kids hanging onto trees floating by, and, you know, just all kinds of things like that. Randy said he remembered a kid floating downstream, and he actually grabbed the bottom of that bridge where the water was just floating under Omaha there, and he said he hung on for a few seconds and watched him go. I don't remember specifically that, but Randy Horder said he did. But I remember just the helpless feeling that we had, you know, watching this and hearing the screams. And anyway, it was a long night, and one gal had a heart attack up there. We tried to help her as much as we could, and the next morning when the sun finally came up, I can remember how slow that water went down. I mean, it just took hours and hours, maybe 5 or 6 hours, you know, from 5 o'clock in the morning until 10:30, I think, or so, when we decided that the water was down about 3.5 feet, you know, and that we started getting people down there. And then we tried to lock arms and with different people and get them across the street to the north to get to higher ground, higher elevation. So that's what we did. And I can remember specifically this guy came by, and I can't remember what kind of a car it was, but it was a station wagon, and it was a brand new car. I mean, it was a brand new car, and we were about two blocks north of there, and he stopped and he looked at us and he said, "Get in." And I said, "Well, we're just a mess. We're a mess." He said, "Get in the car." And he took us to a fire station someplace in the northwest of there. I'm sure the locals would know, but he took us to this fire station, and then from there they took us down onto some kind of a school gymnasium. There were bunk beds and cots spread out all over. I suppose the Red Cross and some of those people were there already, and I know they gave us something to eat. I can remember that fast. And then one of the sergeants from the guard found us, and he took us, loaded us up, and took us. We went up to on top of the hill called the Star Motel. I can remember that, about the highest point in Rapid City. I think it might still be there on like 5th or something
now
like.
Now it's called Star Village.
Star Village houses, yep. Took us up there. We got a room up there, and then us guard guys, we left the girls there, and then we went back to work. And then, you know, after that, we had to do security for looting and trying to find bodies and stuff like that. That's what we continued to do after that. But basically, that was the story in a nutshell of that night. But, you know, I just can't believe that building stood. And anything that came through Canyon Lake and down Jackson Boulevard and through town came right by Omaha, right by us. Like I said, it was all the same level. You can say it was Rapid Creek, but it was all, everything was Rapid Creek that night. That's the nuts and bolts of my story and our story. I just wanted to share that. Wish my guard guys could have came with me, and Marilyn Millam, the other gal, she's in Texas, and like I said, my wife passed away 7.5 years ago.
The other three guys are still in the Webster
area. Yep, Randy Horder is still in Webster, Terry Gajkowski is still in Webster, and Roger Aker is still in Watertown, South Dakota, just 50 miles from us, and Roger Aker can still wear his uniform, bless his soul, not me.
I know the National Guard, I think they lost four guys, so one of them was your commanding officer, is that right?
Yeah, First Sergeant Myron Corbin was killed that night, that's right. And I know his daughter contacted me one time on Facebook, I think, or somehow she got my name and asked me if I knew anything about her dad. And I told her that story, that I had seen him that night, and probably potentially one of the last people to see him, you know. She told me that he had made a phone call from a phone booth to her. And I can't tell you exactly where it was, but Brass Rail is on St. Joe, is that right? And St. Joe and 8th or something like that, okay. I think Mount Rushmore Road, there was a phone booth, and he had made a phone call to her and told her that he was helping people. So that was the last we ever heard from First Sergeant Myron Corbin. It was pretty chaotic, you know. There just wasn't a lot of structure, you know. It was... Mm-hmm. At the time, it was just get together with your commanding officers and find out what your duty was, you know. Well, I guess we did operate out of Camp Rapid. I remember that for a while, you know. But in all fairness, a lot of the is a kind of a blur yet, you know. But I remember it was a lot of looting. I can still remember people. I couldn't believe it. People going into houses and walking out with TVs. I thought that was terrible, you know, that kind of stuff would happen, you know. And we had to confront some people in that respect. And some of the guys, you know, found some deceased people. I fortunately was not exposed to that. But... you know, we were all on the search, and It's such a sad deal, though, that communications were knocked out, you know, and there was no radio, no TV, you know, no way to warn these people, you know, back then when that was knocked out. And, you know, I mean, today we have all these new, you know, cell phones and, I mean, everything, you know, technology we didn't have back then, you know. So we did find my 69 Camaro. It was about a mile and a half downstream.
Really?
Yeah. We eventually found that, but anyway, it was totaled out. But anyway, yeah, and I can remember, you know, I got to tell you, when we got out of there, I got to tell you some of the things that I saw. I said, like I said, nobody had cameras back then. We didn't have the luxury of having cell phone cameras and didn't carry a camera. But I mean, I've told this story before in a couple of interviews at KWAT radio in Watertown. It interviewed me on the 25th anniversary of the flood, and also the local reporter and farmer out of Webster. I can remember that Ford dealership, Kitty Corner, across the street on East Boulevard. I can remember them, the cars all piled up in a pile. I counted 21 cars. That were just like in a cone, you know, just like, I don't know, it must have been 20 feet high, 18 feet high, but they started at the bottom and they just kept going up and up and up, you know. And then the railroad tracks, that's the one that I'll never forget, how the power of that water, how it actually picked up the rails. I mean, can you imagine, you know, how thick a railroad rail is, picked up them railroad tracks and just turned them into like a corkscrew. I said that looked like the corkscrew at Valley Fair, if you've ever seen that, you know. Could not believe the power of that water, you know. Obviously, it picked all the ties up as well, and it just spun that rail around and just twisted it, you know. Phenomenal. And then the noise, the sound of that flood. So many people talk about that. Like, I know it's been described as two freight trains, you know, just coming down. There's a lot of water rushing